Good morning, Northern Michigan, and welcome to Friday Faceoff here on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by Odawa Casino in Mackinac City and Petoskey. Jerry Coyne in studio with Rich Calkins and Keith Gave, and we can go ahead and repeat. I don't know if it'll be as funny.
Good morning, JC. Good morning. I said
good
earlier,
morning.
I was going to start out with an Asian accent, but I
no, top of the morning to you. Yeah, exactly. Just coming from our own ethnic backgrounds and talking those accents, right?
Right. And good for Shohei Ohtani saying, look, he wasn't offended whatsoever. You know, he understands what it's a real sensitive subject to get into, obviously.
Well, there's probably a really good chance he actually wasn't offended because, you know, that's locker room humor.
Yeah.
And,
of course.
Keith, you've seen the evolution of, you know, what used to go on in a locker room before women reporters were ever came in. And then, you know, when women reporters first came in and how much BS was involved with that.
Well, talk about that, the comment Jack Morris had when he was playing back in the day for that.
But. Yeah, there's all kinds of that stuff. And I remember... there's a really good reporter for M Live covering the Red Wings, Ansar Khan, does a really good job. But I remember when he started, you know, he looks ethnic, right? And, you know, he walks in, he starts interviewing players.
He certainly wasn't Canadian.
Sean Burke comes up to me and says, somebody call a cab? And I laughed. And I shouldn't have, you know, but that was the humor in the locker room then. Ansar Khan is a good friend of mine, and I feel bad that I laughed then, but that's the difference between then and now.
Right.
Look, you know, people have been making fun of my height forever. Is that
along with
that
mine.
Rude? Is that, you know, how's the weather up there?
Right.
And, now, you know, I have to call the police, the polite police? No, you know, this just leads... I was talking to Rich and then to JJ about this, is everybody wants to be a victim.
Oh, yeah.
This is one of the biggest problems
Absolutely.
In this country. Everybody wants to be a victim. Now everybody wants a handout. Now nobody's going to work.
Where does it end?
Is political correctness and all these other things getting us in America?
We should talk about mention what we're talking about. Jack Morris the other day, the Tigers broadcaster, when Matt Shepard asked him how he would pitch to Shohei Ohtani when he was coming up the bat next, Jack responded with a kind of an Asian accent to be a little bit funny.
Right.
Somebody came out of the woodwork, started complaining.
He said, very, very
later,
careful.
Very
careful.
Like that. And people came out of the woodworks, or at least one person did, and that's all it takes these days.
Twitter sphere lit up like a light.
Yeah, which is social media, man.
Yes.
It's killing us.
It is.
Well, killing us.
You know, everybody wants to find the problem and then pick at the problem. I said, I don't. I think that people should have a little bit more sensitivity. We see the Cleveland Indians are now changed their name to the Guardians.
Right.
And the Redskins, they're supposed to reveal the name. I don't know if it's going to be the Justice. If there's any justice in America, Rich.
Right, it started right here in this studio.
Right. That's exactly right.
And then there's so many other places like your beloved Central Michigan University that reached out to the Indian community, and they find no problem with it.
No problem at all. They have a great working relationship because they have collaborated for years and years and years. You know what I mean? It hasn't been them against us or anything like that. They have been one big partner, the Chippewa Tribe and CMU, forever.
When the tribe comes out and says, we like it, we want to keep it, you know what?
It's an honor.
It's the third or fourth largest employer in that county.
Oh, exactly. Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting. I didn't know where we were going to go with this, but, ESPN has produced a whole bunch of different episodes for the 150th year of college football. I don't know if you've seen any of those. Some of them are really good.
Yes.
And there was one about mascots and a deep dive discussion into the tribal thing. And, you know, the Seminoles are still the Seminoles, but they actually – got with the tribal leaders there, and now I can't remember what the chief is that rides in on the horse, now is dressed more appropriately and does things in a more accurate depiction of what that ceremony was like.
So it's not a caricature anymore.
Yeah. Right.
But, you know, look, they went to the thing. The worst one of them all is the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame. Notre Dame, that moniker was given to them by sports writers.
Mm.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, Notre Dame did not have it did not have a mascot name, a nickname, or anything else like the Army and the schedule that Notre Dame was playing in the Newt Rockne era.
Yeah.
And it came from, and there was way worse.
Right,
like the drunken Catholics. They hated Notre Dame.
I thought they borrowed it
off. Irish Catholics, Rich, were as reviled ethnic group as anything. In fact, Jews came to the rescue of Irish Catholics in New York City because when they first came over, ever saw Gangs in New York?
Oh, yes.
I mean, the Irish were hated.
Huh.
They were the first ethnic group to come over here that really took the brunt of them not being American. Mm-hmm. Jews were already over here.
Right.
Italians were already over here. It was the Irish that took the pounding.
That's right.
And John F. Kennedy, people never thought that JFK could win the election
because he was
Irish Catholic.
Yeah. Yep.
So, you know, this has been going on forever.
I thought sports writers got the mascot off a Lucky Charms box.
Yeah, there you go. Kellogg's didn't start making Lucky Charms till the 40s, but nice try.
I didn't realize, JC, that the Fighting Irish came from sports writers.
That's right.
I did not either. I had no idea.
Yeah. So, and, you know, and a lot of people think, is that guy drunk or whatever? Yeah. But you don't hear Irish complaining about it, you know? It's like, we are fighting Irish. We had to scratch and claw our way into this country.
Yeah.
And they ended up getting the jobs that nobody else wanted, which was cops and firemen.
Right.
And
politicians.
Exactly. So there you go. And judges.
Yes. Oh,
okay,
yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
yes.
So they're, you know,
they,
nowadays.
They figured it out.
Possessions of power, right.
They will run you as a lawyer if you have an Irish name.
Yep.
Like people don't know anything about you. Murphy, well, he's got to be a good Irish lawyer.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. So it's a tricky subject. You know, it's a touch easier to talk about here in Northern Michigan.
Right.
So Jack Morris has been suspended indefinitely.
Indefinitely. It's going to take sensitivity.
I assume he's still broadcasting for the Minnesota Twins. I don't know that, but he shared.
It's owned by the same company. There's no way.
Oh, okay. So
there's no way.
Right. Bally would have.
I didn't realize that. Well, so he's not, obviously.
Well, Bally owns the rights to all the regional.
I don't think so, because they've already made like a plan, it sounds like, for him to re-enter. He's going to sensitivity classes.
Keith is asking this because he wants him to be fired because he hates
Jack Morris. There are plenty of reasons to fire Jack Morris, but not for that.
Right.
Not for that. I'm biased. I'll admit that.
Yep.
It turned out great for me because the following day, I bet Ohtani to throw 8 strikeouts and win the baseball game at +400 and to hit a home run and win the game at +750. And both of those things cashed in.
I got the over-under right in all 3 games, by the way.
Yeah.
But
go ahead. Take over the betting court.
I'm not very good at betting.
Right.
You are.
I noticed that you've been laying that on Game On Update.
Just a little tidbit.
Okay.
I don't do it every time, but...
It's just keeping the listeners tuned in when Keith drops a little nugget like that.
So you're still on a roll, in other words.
I won the preseason game last night, but they were a 1-point underdog.
Wow.
New England was?
New England Patriots were a 1-point underdog.
Against a bad Philadelphia Eagle team.
It didn't help anything that Jalen Hurts didn't play. I mean, this is one of the things that happens in gambling.
Yeah.
On the Ohtani day, the third bet I had was the Giants to beat the Mets. Well, Descalso, who is their best starter on the Giants, pitched to 4 batters. Had felt a problem in his ankle. The Giants were winning 1-0. They had a bullpen game. And they couldn't hold it in the bottom of the ninth. They went to the 12th, and Pete Alonso hit a three-run homer in the top of the 12th inning, and I lost the bet. But you know, that's what happens, and that's why they call it gambling, Rich.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the Tigers a little bit? And Ohtani, by the way. Yeah. I mean, we're all excited about Miguel Cabrera trying to get his 500th home run. They played six games at Comerica Park. It didn't happen. But there were 27,282 fans to see Shohei Ohtani do something really special the other day.
He is amazing.
Talk about history, Rich.
Oh, Keith, I tell you what, that guy, you know, he's hit already 40 home runs.
Leading the major leagues.
And, you know, and to see how humble that guy is, like to see him when he goes out there. I always want, because you see him talking to the, because he needs an interpreter, of course, so he must understand a little bit of broken English.
He understands.
So, because he's carrying on conversations with the first baseman, with Miguel Cabrera, if he's on second base, whatever the case may be.
But Japanese are so precise. They don't want to make mistakes, so they rely on an interpreter to help him out. But I'm sure he speaks English with his teammates.
Okay.
I'm sure he does.
Okay. Just seems like a very nice guy, is what he really seems.
And a hell of a baseball
player. Oh, unbelievable.
Our great-great-grandchildren will be talking about this guy, like we talk about Babe Ruth.
And yeah, I mean,
maybe
he's
maybe. It depends. Yeah, maybe it's a season.
Yeah.
Okay, and, you know, it's a season. But guys have singular seasons that get lost in history.
True.
I mean,
true.
You know, Mark Friedrich is glorified here. Ask somebody from Atlanta if they've ever heard of Mark Friedrich.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying.
No,
I'm not saying that he's not having a fantastic season. He should be the MVP. There's a lot of players, you know, Freddie Lynn won the Rookie of the Year award and was MVP. How many times do you hear Freddie Lynn talked about?
Shohei Ohtani started the All-Star game as a pitcher, was in the Home Run Derby the night before, and was the designated hitter in the All-Star lineup. I mean,
I'm not denigrating him. I'm just saying that people are not going to talk about Shohei Ohtani in the same breath as Babe Ruth if he doesn't continue to have some kind of career. How long did Babe Ruth play baseball?
In Japan, they will.
Well, we're not in Japan.
I get that.
But Keith,
I think it's bigger than this.
Keith, mentioned something that Babe Ruth never did, how Shohei Ohtani, how he steals bases.
He's
going to have 25 stolen bases probably. Over 40 home runs, he's already there. Yeah. He hit, you know, pretty decent at 260, 270 average, batting leadoff. I mean, it's just incredible.
I agree, JC, that he needs to be judged over an entire career. I believe that, too. But this is a really, really special baseball season we're witnessing.
There's no doubt about it, okay? And if you want to talk about this for a minute, Mike Trout people are talking about Mike Trout is the greatest baseball player ever.
Yep.
He's played 30 games in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So if he is an injured shell of himself for the rest of his career, is he the greatest baseball player of all time? No. People are talking about Patrick Mahomes, the greatest football player of all time.
They're putting him in the Hall of Fame already.
Give me a break.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great year for Shohei Ohtani. Yeah. We will see how much longer he is either pitching or hitting full time, because it's not going to happen long.
No, I don't think so. I agree with that.
Okay. Yeah, so when he converts to, so what's he going to, if you're looking in your crystal ball, what does Ohtani move on to? Do you keep him as a full time player, or do you keep him as a pitcher?
He's a pitcher to me. I mean, no.
He's a player. He's just like Babe Ruth. He's a hitter to me.
Yes, me too. You got to put him DH
or something.
First thing the Yankees did, Rich.
160 games a year. You got to.
The first thing the Yankees did was, you're not pitching anymore,
right,
Babe.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's no way he gets to 714 home runs if he's pitching.
And too much risk for injury shuts down for a whole year. Less likely a catastrophic injury as a full time player.
So we'll see where he's at in 5 to 7 years. Yeah. And if he's still slugging 50 home runs, people will go, what a player. And geez, he was an incredible pitcher, too.
Right.
But there's a number of guys that have been in and out of the major leagues that had both of those skill sets that just had to set down.
Right.
You know, because you can't do it all. Yeah. Dave DeBuscher played NBA basketball and pitched for the White Sox.
Yep.
Okay? It's just you can't do it very long.
Right.
The body is not going to let you do it.
Exactly.
So, I again, no disrespect to Ohtani at all. He's doing something that like you said, hasn't been done since the 1920s.
Yeah, we've never seen it.
Yeah,
I mean,
but the jury is still out on how great this guy is going to be viewed as a long term career. How many? You know,
he sure is fun to
you
watch.
Could have this discussion forever. How come when the Detroit Tigers won the World Series in '84? How many more World Series did you think they were going to win?
A couple more.
Yeah, I thought that 84 team for sure was going to win a few more. And I thought the teams that from 2010 to 18 were going to win a couple too.
That's right. Or the Cubs team. How did they only win one?
Yep.
And how did Dan Marino only go to one Super Bowl? I mean,
his rookie year.
History is not kind to guys that spout out, this is going to be the greatest player of all time. Knock on wood, it doesn't happen to Patrick Mahomes or anybody else.
No, I agree.
And, hopefully history is a little kinder to Miguel Cabrera. I think you brought it up last week, Keith, how long people have gone between their 499th and 500th home run. You know what the longest span is? 13 games.
13.
If you can name the guy, I'll pay for your coffee.
Who's got 500 home runs?
Yeah.
28 guys.
Yeah.
He'll be the 27th.
Jimmy Fox.
Jimmy Fox.
Yeah. Right behind him was Harmon Killebrew, who we talked about.
Yeah.
It took Killebrew 12 games to get to his 500th home run, and he only hit a couple more. I think Killebrew stopped at 506.
Okay.
So Cabrera is heading to Toronto.
Right.
Hasn't had a home run in Toronto since 2017.
Well, the dimensions are pretty close to Comerica Park.
And then he's in St. Louis, which is not the easiest place to hit
fairly,
a home run either.
I looked up the dimensions for all three of those parks, Comerica versus Rogers Center and Busch Stadium, and they're all quite similar. I'm thinking that fly ball that he hit to right field the other day, that would be out in a lot of ballparks, not Toronto and not St. Louis.
Okay. Well, we talked about that. How many home runs would he have right now if he was playing in Houston?
Yes.
Right. You know?
Right.
Close to 600,
Or Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, very, very much so.
So, anyways, the Cabrera watch continues, lately it's the only watch you want to see because the Tigers have not been performing up to what they were just a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if the team has been a little stymied.
Distracted by this.
Yeah.
I think there's some of that. 1-5 on this road trip. They had a cup of coffee in second place the other day. They're solidly in third right now. And yesterday's loss was a disgrace.
That was the worst loss of the year, I believe.
10-2, they're up. They got a young pitcher in there, Matt Manning, who's pitched 4 2/3 innings. He's got an 8-run lead, and they take him out of the game. I think that game was mismanaged yesterday. We say a lot of good things about A.J. Hinch. I know he got thrown out of the game, but he's still calling the shots from the shower.
Right.
That kid should have never been taken out. They put 4 2/3 innings. He gave up 2 runs, 5 hits, I think. He's pitching all right. I don't care about his pitch count. He's got an 8-run lead. Give him a chance to be the pitcher of record and get the win.
Yep.
They took him out, and the bullpen collapsed. Everybody was awful. Michael Fulmer was terrible. They lose the game 13-10. It was a joke.
It was not a good home showing for this Tiger team that's really trying to get – we had more people there. It was awesome, but it's not going to do good for future home games.
That's the biggest issue I have. Is that they get the biggest crowds they've had for the entire home game.
They stink.
And they stink to join up. Yeah, they didn't do anybody any favors.
No.
And now they go on the road. They play the Blue Jays and the Cardinals, who are both deep into playoff spot runs. So we'll see if they can pose any real opposition.
By the way, a friend of mine was out in the right field stands for one of those games. John Thiel teaches at Kirtland Community College, and his wife Amanda were there, and John Thiel caught a home run ball.
Did he really?
From
Justin Upton?
No, it was a Tiger on Nunez. He caught that home run ball.
The
TV showed him. It's kind of cool.
Did he keep it or did he give it to a kid?
I think he's probably kept it. He's got a dog named K-Line. You know, I mean, he's a big Tigers fan.
All right. When we return, we're going to talk about even a bigger happening in sports for the state of Michigan. I wonder what it is. That and more here on Friday Face-Off on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by Odawa Casino in Mackinac City and Petoskey. Welcome back to Friday Faceoff here on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by Mackinac City, Odawa Casino in Mackinac City, and Petoskey, open for gaming, dining, and sports booking right now. Keith Gabe and Rich Calkins are joining me, Jerry Coyne, in studio. And since we were just talking about it off air, we did want to note the passing of Tiger great Bill Freehan, the catcher, the legendary catcher of the 68 World Series team. But played for 15 seasons, all in a Tiger uniform.
Right.
A University of Michigan kid.
Yeah.
A two-sport letterman at U of M, played football. Yeah, he was a tight end. And the Tigers signed him, gave him $100,000.
It was his big money
in 1961. That's what Kaline was making at the time.
Yeah.
I don't even think Kaline was making quite that at the time.
He wasn't.
That's a huge payday.
You know, Kaline said, you know, when they the first time they had the Tigers offered him $100,000, he didn't want to take it.
Yeah, I'm not worth it.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't hear that today by anybody.
You know, he was a family friend. My dad and he were business partners for 6 years. And then Bill got out of the business to go coach
at
the U of M because they were coming off that horrible scandal.
Right.
And he didn't want to see that happen.
Yeah.
You know, Bill was a very down-to-earth, self-facing guy. Never thought of him as a big star, even when people were fawning all over him. And I saw that. Mm-hmm. You know, you would see guys come up and just... you know, grown men. Oh, my God, you know, you're the
Bill
greatest.
Bill Freehan.
Yeah, you're Bill Freehan. And he would just say, no, I'm just Bill.
Yeah.
And but please don't jump into my arms.
Yeah.
My back's never been the same.
since Mickey jumped in there,
Lynn Henning wrote a wonderful article about it. About the two most legendary images from the 68 World Series.
Those are the ones that I had. I mean, I can remember exactly where I was. I was skipping class at Olivet College, sitting in a community room in the men's dorm, watching an afternoon baseball game when they came from behind and beat St. Louis. And that pop-up, Freehand catches it, and boom, Mickey Loge is right there with a big bear hug, and he's carrying Mickey around in his arms.
Was that the very same game that Willie Horton threw from left field?
No,
that was
no,
the game.
No.
Seven was the game five.
That's right.
Was game five or four?
They were up 3-1. I think it was game five. I think it was game five when they were coming back.
They were coming back. That would have been,
Lou Brock didn't slide, and Freehand tagged him at home plate.
Because blocking the plate like a tight end.
Right.
I mean,
right. Well. Oh, it was that! What an incredible! You think of the little events that took place for them to win that.
Two guys.
Oh my gosh!
The Horton throw.
Yes.
And the Freehand blocking the
plate. Yeah, Horton talked about that. You know, about Freehand being the absolute leader of that team. You know, because Kaline really wasn't that kind of guy.
And he was older too.
And
he was pretty old at that point.
Yeah. But no, I'm kind of. I don't know if it'll happen, but. They should have that statue of Freehand and Lolich in the Memorial Park where they've got Kaline and Cobb
great one.
And everything else.
JC, jumping in his arms.
That's you're absolutely right.
That would be an iconic image. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
What was
absolutely.
It, the first World Series victory they had since 1945?
Yeah.
And at a time when Detroit needed something like that.
Yeah. Saved the franchise.
Yeah.
So it's like I said, he was a family friend, and I know my brother. My brother Brian dated his daughter Kelly for a long time. It's very sad. I know he was struggling with Alzheimer's.
Right.
Mickey Lolich had some really nice things to say. I don't want to get into it. You can find him online. But and same thing with Mickey Stanley. Mickey Stanley had spent some time with Patty. And Bill on Lake Walloon Lake, they have a place up here.
I didn't realize that they had a place up here just south of Petoskey.
You know, Bill's been suffering with this for a long, long time.
Yeah.
How is he not in the Hall of Fame? 11 guys. A part of it is dominating the time that you play. How can a guy that played 15 years, an 11-time All-Star, what, 5-time Gold Glove winner, World Series
champ? The batting average and the home run numbers, that's it.
Yeah.
They just, Ted Simmons was the highest WAR as a catcher.
Right.
Right.
So I mean, it wouldn't be surprising to see him get in with the old timers guys.
Right.
But I don't think it matters to Detroit Tiger fans.
No.
Yeah.
No. No,
not at all.
He, but he, you know, to a lot of us, he's a Hall of Famer.
No question. I mean, bench in the National League, free hand in the American League. Those guys were the benchmarks.
Yep. So God bless Bill Freehand. Now, rest in peace, Bill. We want to talk briefly about something that's never happened in the state of Michigan before, and that is James Piatt winning the U.S. Amateur, the highest award that you can win as an amateur golfer in this country, actually in the world. There's been a number in the last 20 years. There's been a few foreigners that's actually won the U.S. Amateur. Mm-hmm. You got so many guys over here now that play collegiate golf that come from other countries, and everybody recognizes how difficult a task it is to win the U.S. Amateur. You have to play two rounds of metal play to make it into the cut of 72, and then you play match play all the way out. Wow. And every one of those days is 36 holes.
Wow.
Is that right?
Wow. It's a good thing you're a kid.
It's a grind, hey?
Yeah. It is a grind.
Wow.
And the list, Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Justin Leonard, Mark O'Meara, The one of the very interesting things about what James Piatt did is he was extremely lowly ranked. He was the 86th ranked amateur in the world, taking on the 81st amateur. You don't usually see it. It's usually the cream of the crop that comes through there.
Right.
But they played on the toughest golf course in the world. Oakmont, they say, if you got to have an emergency U.S. Open, we're ready to host you in 2 weeks.
No kidding.
Yeah.
They can get ready at the end.
Wow.
Essentially, they don't even allow guys that are below a 10, above a 10 handicap to even be members.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. It is that it's one of those golf courses. There's a few in the country like that. Butler in Chicago is an all-man's club, but you also got to be a really good golfer. And there's a place out in Arizona that's like that, too. It's called Whisper Rock. Mm-hmm. You can't be more than a 7.
Wow.
Holy cow.
Yeah, so... Wow. We play competitive golf here, gentlemen, and we don't have handicaps.
Right.
So the club championship is open. You don't play that. You know, it's just one of those places.
This kid Piatt seems like a really good kid. They interviewed him yesterday during the ball game. He had a Tigers shirt on, you know, and so on. And
very cool.
He came off very, very nice. And he's excited about a lifetime membership at Oakmont and some of the tournaments that he's going to be able to play now.
He gets to play in the Masters. The U.S. Open and the Open Championship.
Yep.
How cool.
A lot of times what happens when these guys win the U.S. U.S. Amateur, they always take the invitation to the Masters, but then a lot of them turn pro after that. I don't think you'll see Piatt do that. I think you'll see him play in the U.S. Open and the Open Championship and then determine.
How old a kid is he?
He's 20. You saw what Izzo said, right?
Did you? No, I did not.
It's a golf school now, man.
Oh, that's okay. Did you know of him prior to this, Jason?
Yeah,
you follow golf closer.
He had a great year this year. He won the GAM, which is one of the four majors in Michigan golf. He won what was called the Horton Smith. I don't know what it was now. He made it to the quarterfinals of the Western Amateur, which is the second biggest American amateur championship. So, yeah, I've heard of James Piatt. He's been in competition. He's a Catholic Central kid.
Oh, is he? And he won in fairly dramatic fashion. He was down three strokes with 9 holes to go and came back and won.
Yeah, he was winning in the first. At lunch, he was up 1. And he's not a big bomber. He was playing a guy that hits it really long. He's more of a strategic player. Like the Corey Pavin type of guy.
Yeah. He said yesterday he hits about 300 off the tee.
Yeah, he didn't hit a 300 when I was watching him. Okay. But I mean, they were playing in soggy conditions.
And that can be intimidating when you're playing match play against a dude that's bombing it down there all the time. It would be easy to get out of your game.
It can be. There's no doubt about it. I learned the hard way playing with Bill Laimbeer because I used to hit it pretty good, and Laimbeer just
right.
Wow,
the airplane coming. But, congratulations. The first time that a Michigan-born player has ever won the U.S. Amateur, and he's returning to play his senior year at Michigan State.
Very cool.
It's pretty cool stuff. When we return here, on Friday Faceoff. We'll talk a little NFL and collegiate football, and we'll talk to the guys from the Record Eagle Sports Department. It's all here on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by Odawa Casino in Mackinac City and Petoskey. Welcome back to Friday Faceoff here on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by Odawa Casino in Mackinac City and Petoskey. Jerry Coyne in studio with Rich Calkins and Keith Gave. And guys, I noticed that Dan Campbell, our favorite quote, called himself an a-hole for firing for cutting Muehlbach on his birthday. You know, he's fantastic.
Oh my gosh, Keith! I think you're going to come out of retirement to go sit in on his press conference.
He's my new favorite coach. You know, I'm on a listserv with the Lions. I get they send me the quote sheet from the coaches every day. I never read Patricia's because it were over and over and over.
Yeah, it was the same thing.
But Matt, Dan Campbell is must listen to, must read. You got to pay attention to this guy because his quotes are great. And And you cut a former teammate, a guy who's played 17 seasons, 260 games, 27th all-time in the NFL, and you cut him on his 40th birthday.
And he didn't realize it was his birthday, and that got brought to his attention, and he called. He goes, well, I'm an a-hole for doing that.
You know, he also, they explained why they did it. You know, look at Muehlbach wasn't sure he was going to come back anyways.
Right.
And he doesn't get downfield anymore.
Right.
And
right.
So
sure.
When he's making a long snap on a punt, that could end up being the difference of a 35-yard gain. And sentiment be damned, we're going to, there's no turds on the roster. So
no.
If he was turd-like, then he was shown the door. And but it looks like we're not going to see any Jared Goff.
Or DeAndre Swift.
Swift.
The next two games.
Right.
Yeah. I guess they saw enough Jared Goff yesterday in the preseason game. Two interceptions, nearly two more against that defense.
Oh, I know. I was going to say, it really wasn't a great their first preseason game was when ones versus ones for the first series or so.
Well, the offensive line did a horrible job in that game.
Penne Pasta let the guy right, the very first snap. He let him right around him.
Period.
Like,
I mean that Buffalo.
Penne Pasta.
The Buffalo defense is ranked top five in the O-line did not do Goff any favors.
No.
And everybody has always said that about Goff. He's got to have a little bit of a cleaner pocket. He's got. Look at how well New England protected for Cam Newton yesterday.
Yeah, and Mac Jones.
Yeah,
both.
We saw what no protection did to Matt Stafford for a decade.
Yes,
and what happened in the Super Bowl?
Oh,
Pat Mahomes ran for his life, and it didn't matter that he was the best elusive runner ever.
Yeah. He was a great athlete, but
I got to believe they're going to clean that up. They're too good up there. The Athletic did a deep dive on every team's top, every team's offensive line, and they ranked them. And the Lions ranked number 8 in the NFL offensive line.
Well, they didn't play like the 8th best offensive line against
Buffalo.
No, I agree
with that.
No, but
what happens if Goff gets hurt in a preseason game?
They're screwed.
Well, actually, if you read some of the stuff, there's some people think that Boyle is a better quarterback than Goff. So I'm just saying.
Boyle's been playing behind Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay, so he's learned some things from him.
Well, and Rodgers didn't look that swift against the Buccaneers defense either with Bakhtiari out.
Yeah.
Look at the defense when you have. That's the thing that I'm most concerned about the Lions.
Yes.
Can they put pressure? You've got to put pressure on a quarterback. It might be even a more important thing, Keith, than actually protecting your quarterback.
Well, it's the two most important, I think. Protect and get pressure. And when you can't stop the run, then all hell breaks loose.
Well, if you can't pressure and you can't stop the run, you've got issues. You're the Dallas Cowboys.
It's a free for all then. Free for all.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm not into fantasy football.
I
hate it. But if I'm a fantasy football guy, I'm taking DeAndre Swift this year early. I think he's going to run wild behind that line.
Do
I think? And if he does that, Goff's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Well, if he does that and Hockenson stays healthy, then they're going to move the ball.
Exactly.
And I love what I saw about Aaron, what's his name?
The rookie from USC.
He looks like he's going to be a player.
He does. So, he's a bad, like, kid's a fighter, literally. He's gotten in two or three fights in training. Yes. That's what his own teammates.
His dad was Mr. America.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and Cephas has got to play a little better. I mean, you know, the Lions are going to be a work in process. And we're going to be interested to see them. You know what's been interesting? I don't know if you've been following, Keith. Some of the news out of U of M sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it does.
You know, the guys from the Big Ten Network were there and said that this does not resemble U of M's team last year from any standpoint.
Really?
So, you know, it will be interesting. Michigan's got their work cut out for them. No, they don't have the toughest schedule in America. Okay. Well, it was like three out of five SEC teams that are playing in the same division as Georgia and Alabama have got their issues.
Right.
But Michigan does have the hardest ranked schedule from the Big Ten. And Western Michigan is going to give them a battle.
There's some talent on that Western team this year for sure.
And then they got Washington coming to town.
Who's going to is it Cade McNamara? Is he going to be the quarterback?
That's the guy.
They said that he's got everything that they like. He's got a great arm. He's tough. Guys like him. But they like the kid
that five-star kid that just came in.
Yeah, the freshman the third string guy who they brought in from Texas Tech. So Michigan's going to be okay at quarterback. Mike Hart says he loves his running backs. If the O-line can blow open some holes, you might see a Michigan team that people are going to be happy to watch.
Well, they were 3-5 last year, and just throw that out the window, really. So it's not no surprise that they're not ranked in the top 25, AP top 25. But I agree. I think they're better than people think, and they're going to wind up in the top 25 before the season's over.
We'll see. You know, they've got Wisconsin at Wisconsin. They haven't won at Wisconsin since like the 90s. Indiana is going to be really, really good.
Really good, yeah.
We'll see. You know, I'm not sure about Penn State. You know, the one thing, as we're talking about college football, I understand Alabama always has the number one ranked recruiting class. I don't see how they're the number one ranked team in the country. Name a player on that team.
Well, I can't. But what they seem to do when they show up in the college playoff every year is a kid that I'd never heard of before was a five-star recruit from 2 years ago, had been sitting on the bench, and they just backfilled these guys. And next thing you know, he's a first-round pick, and you're like, the kid played 1 year, but he's had so much talent because he's been playing behind other super talented kids.
And that's my question about Ohio State. Ohio State and Alabama lost – each of those guys lost eight starters, you know, and I know, yes, we've got four stars and five stars and everything else, but, you know, I don't know how much those guys played.
Right.
And conversely, though, Ohio State has the easiest schedule in the Big Ten. I don't know how that keeps happening. They do have Oregon coming in the game number two, so that should give us a little bit of a vision on what Ohio State looks like.
Yeah, and there's just so much respect paid to Saban and Ryan Day, guys that have done a good job thus far, and certainly I don't put Ryan Day in with Saban in the same level, but they give them that benefit of the doubt automatically to start the season.
Any thoughts where college football is going with regard to merging
image.
Conferences and
I mean the Big Ten has had their conversations with the ACC. And the Pac-12, and about scheduling, you know, maybe they have to sit in a room and do this for a year or two before they figure out how making of a super conference. But, you know, so the SEC is sitting there with now not really anything much to do.
Right.
So if you combine the rest of that, I don't know what you call it. The
talk about merging the Pac-12 and the Big 12, merging those two conferences.
That's not the conversation I've heard at all.
It's out there. There's
no, but it's the three of them, and they're talking about scheduling only.
Yeah,
I don't know how you merged the Pac-12 and the Big Ten together.
No, Pac-12 and the Big 12, not the Big Ten.
No, that's not what I've heard. The discussions that have been talked about.
I've heard all kinds of two or three different scenarios.
That's why I brought the conversation up.
Yeah,
well, the Big 12 and the Pac-12 and the Big Ten have always had an alignment.
They
play the non-conference schedules.
Yep.
So there's so much to wade through.
For sure.
I mean, the Big 12, the Big Ten has got 16 teams already.
By all accounts, Kansas is begging to join the Big Ten.
Well, I'm sure there's a few other teams that are begging to.
And what you don't. If
Nebraska
you're the Big
needs
Ten,
a doormat.
They do. Yeah, especially now when they got a lot of stuff going on there.
They're in trouble.
Yep. But, I mean, you don't want to be left holding the bag, you know, and the SEC was proactive to go get Texas. And I think the Big Ten needs to react to that quickly because if they don't, I think they're going to lose out on potential revenue.
I agree.
And they're already the richest conference already because of the TV deals, the great TV deals that the Big Ten Network has and everything. But I think they need to grab some of those higher profile programs and bring them into the fold.
Then they might have to dump some out.
Maybe a cleansing?
Rutgers. No, I'm just saying, and that's part of the discussion with the ACC and the, you know, actually I would like to see the ACC and the Big Ten merge. You bring Clemson, you bring Notre Dame, you bring North Carolina and Duke in.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then you're looking at some serious.
Now you compete with SEC. Yeah,
that's exactly.
But you have to.
Then you have football.
That means Rutgers is getting out.
Yep.
You got basketball, football covered nicely.
I'd keep Maryland. You know, does Nebraska go? I mean, you know, Nebraska is not Nebraska anymore.
No, no.
You know, a lot of people worried that Penn State was going to be a horrible fit for the Big Ten. They'd lose their identity. They've managed to keep it.
Yeah.
Nebraska has not been really that beneficial to the Big Ten. So I would not be surprised if those were one of the teams jettisoned. Maybe Purdue. I don't know. They'd have to make some hard decisions.
For sure.
You know, Purdue has not done anything in football in decades, and occasionally they're a pretty decent basketball school.
Yep.
And then there's one other thing to consider, and that is how important academics is to the Big Ten.
Which is why Northwestern's not going anywhere.
Northwestern is never going anywhere, I guess. We got to keep our GPA
that's
up.
That's exactly right.
That's why they liked me as a walk-on, right?
a swimmy, they call it.
Right.
Players with good GPAs, keep them afloat.
When we return here on Friday Faceoff, we're going to talk to the boys from the Get Around Podcast and the Record Eagle Sports Department on Friday Faceoff up here on Up North Sports Radio. I shouldn't say up. Over here, down there on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by Odawa Casino in Mackinac City and Petoskey.
Resort and Casinos. Your vacation starts here.
Welcome back to Friday Faceoff here on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by Odawa Casino in Mackinac City and Petoskey. Jerry Coyne in studio with the Gabby Rich Calkins and Keith Gave. And on the phone with us is James Cook from the Record Eagle Sports Department. James, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Well, we're excited. We're on the cusp of high school football. In fact, Rich and I are going to do our first high school show here at 11 o'clock. I'm sure you've got your track shoes on.
Oh, yeah. I went to two scrimmages yesterday, and I'm going to another one this afternoon. So trying to get the scoop on some of these teams and, you know, do some previews that we'll be running next week and get a running start into those openers on Thursday and Friday.
All right, James. Well, since you went to those scrimmages, kind of give us a little bit of the early scouting report.
I went to the one scrimmage last night in Glen Lake, and there we had Heath Jordan and Glen Lake and McBain. Heath Jordan actually looked pretty solid as the day went on. They kind of wore down because they don't have a whole lot of depth, so they were playing bigger teams. So we'll see how that translates during the season. But earlier in the scrimmage, their run defense was kind of stymieing Glen Lake.
Wow.
As the day wore on, you know, Glen Lake McBain had more people. They played better, and looked pretty good. And then later in the evening, I went to the scrimmage at Frankfort that had a couple of other local teams, Frankfort and Mancelona, and trying to think of who the third one was. But Frankfort actually was a team that, in that one, really kind of impressed me. Mancelona looked pretty solid. Elk Rapids was the other team. And they have a new coaching staff, kind of a young team where they lost a lot last year.
Right.
And stuff. But Frankfort, I think, looks like they could be one of the teams that makes some noise this year, I think.
Yeah.
Then this afternoon, I'm going to Manistee Catholic to see Sutton's Bay and Brethren at Manistee Catholic.
And what I like to do always early in the season, James, is I look at the numbers of kids that are coming out for each one of the programs because, as we know, football is kind of under attack the past few years, all that. How did the numbers seem for each one of those teams?
For Glen Lake, they were down slightly, but not a ton. I think it was Elk Rapids and Mancelona have dropped JV football. That's a concern, with numbers. One thing I've kind of noticed with a few schools around here is smaller classes in the freshman and sophomore levels. And so that's led to a couple of schools having lower numbers. Frankfort actually doesn't have a lot of kids on their team either, but, so they're going with a unified one team with no JV. So I mean, some of those smaller schools, it is hitting, those smaller numbers, but at Traverse City Central and Traverse City West, numbers seem strong. St. Francis, the numbers seem strong.
Good.
Yeah. I understand. I thought it was my understanding that Joburg was going to move to 8-man football. That last year was the last year for 12-man, but they're hanging on, and actually they've got less kids in the program than St. Mary's does for 8-man.
No kidding.
Yeah, there are one or two injuries away from forfeiting. We saw that with Atlanta a few years ago, where they had to
finish the season.
I'm surprised that we haven't seen more teams jump to 8-man football.
Yeah, we had the big run of it a few years ago, and then there hasn't been a whole lot more in the last year or two that have done it. Joburg is one of those teams that numbers-wise is on the cusp, but I think that they're going to try to hold on and play 11-player football as long as possible. I kind of thought the same thing about Gaylord St. Mary, and then they finally just made the jump.
Yeah.
But, it's the rush to go to 8-player is kind of slowing down, at least here. I think there's a few more teams downstate this year. But, it's interesting. And Nekema has an 8-player team, and they've been that way for a few years now. But I think they only have 11 players on their team.
Yeah. And I think that I believe the MHSAA sets an enrollment number that you have to be below so many kids in your high school to play 8-man football. They might have to get rid of that.
That might have to get rid of that.
Yeah, because
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's the way it was a couple years ago, whether it's still a rule or not. But I believe they're going to have to expand that number or get rid of it just to have some of these programs survive.
Jake, assuming
it's, you can, regardless of what your size is, you can play 8-player football, but to be eligible for the playoffs, your enrollment has to be there, around, it's about the break point between Class C and D. So it's around 200, 210, so schools like Mesick was straddling that line for a couple of years and had to get a waiver because they were like two kids over the limit. And, they got a waiver from state to be able to play in the playoffs.
Well, we're going to have Kevin O'Connell on from St. Mary's, and he was dead set about playing 11-man football.
He was.
But he was surprised at how much he's enjoyed coaching St. Mary's as an 8-man football team now. So,
good.
And he's a defensive, run-the-football kind of guy. So, you never know what's going to happen. It's still football.
It is. Yeah, and it gives the kids mm-hmm. a chance oh, to yeah. play.
Go ahead, James.
And you can still play that, and you can still play that style in eight-player football. You can still play a defensive brand of football. You can still run the ball. I mean, we saw that a few years ago when Central Lake won the state title in eight-player.
Right.
They were ground, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. You know, run the ball out of the eye, even in an eight-player formation, and it got them a state championship. So it's not all arena football.
Yeah. James, I guess we'll be seeing you at the Big House. I'm sure you'll be there with both Central and West playing on Thursday.
Yeah, I will be there. That should be a very interesting game. It would be interesting to see from my perspective what they do with the media. From what I understand, they're not allowing the media in the press box. They're just not going to have the press box open.
So, right.
I'm not sure exactly where we're going to be.
Well, you can always, they're going to be on the main concourse. We've already got this. Rich and Tom are already mapped out. They have their credentials. I guess they're going to have a fairly sizable media area right on that main concourse, right on the 50-yard line. So make sure you stop by mm-hmm. and say hello to Rich and Tom.
Will do.
What's on the get around real quick?
Well, this week we had some Traverse City Central offensive linemen, Caden Warner and Keegan Opper from that offensive line I told you guys about last week that has the five kids that are all getting college offers. We're going to have some Traverse City West players this week, looking forward to those games in the Big House. And then this coming up this Sunday, we've got our fall preview section coming out with a lot of in-depth feature stories players to watch and a lot of whole other features for this coming up to the season.
Oh, that's awesome. Looking forward to that, James.
All right, James, as we said, you'll see Rich and Tom at the big game at the Big House.
Sounds good. I'll look for you.
All right. See you, bud.
So here we are.
It is here now. When that Sunday paper comes out, the fall preview, it makes it real.
I'll tell you what, this guy that we just talked with, one of the busiest guys in the state of Michigan right now. This is a really, really busy time of year. If you're covering prep sports, I've been there.
Yeah.
And you're trying to do your daily stuff and put out a great big section for Sunday on all the area high school sports.
The coverage area that he has is unbelievable.
It's a ton of work. Yeah. And if he sounds a little tired this morning, you know why.
Well, and they're down a man.
Yeah. They are. Yeah, with exactly. Jake taking a new job.
Yeah. Starting this morning, Rich and I are going to continue the Friday Faceoff program with a Northern Michigan preview show about what's upcoming in sports, primarily right now in football, because as you mentioned, Keith, starting next week, we got full Michigan State and everything else. Can't get it all in an hour, right. So we wanted to give justice to Northern Michigan high school sports.
And you're gonna do this every Friday.
We're doing this
good
every
deal.
Friday.
Good deal.
As long as Rich's voice holds.
Right. Hey, I keep hitting this coffee. It's doing wonders because earlier on I was in big trouble, but right now I'm making it.
I got a couple things before we close, if you don't mind. The Red Wings finally, mercifully, bought out Franz Nielsen yesterday, opening up a roster spot for a younger guy that they want to develop. So Nielsen's out, and nobody's brokenhearted about that. He's been horrible the last couple of years. And down in East Lansing, we got to watch what's developing in East Lansing with the hiring of the new AD. There's a little bit of a cluster going on down there with the president's Samuel Stanley kind of blocking. To the dismay of the trustees and a lot of fans, Tom Izzo, from becoming just the interim athletic director. The president seems to be conducting his own search.
Yeah.
And, with not a lot of transparency, and that's ticking a lot of trustees off.
They usually use a hiring firm.
Well, yeah.
They do, but he's got his own search going.
He's done that quietly behind the scenes. The trustees didn't know
anything about it.
Oh, no, Keith, that was a bombshell.
This is something to watch.
Not only did he block it, like you said, he says, I expect him make an announcement next week on who I'm hiring. And they're all sitting there holding the bag going, what?
Well, the maybe trustees? It's a good distraction because, you know, other than George Blaha, a lot of people are not really liking what's going to happen with this Michigan State football team, Keith.
Let's play the games and see.
No, I'm let's not. Play I'm the not say, yeah.
I think they're going to probably be a little better than people think. I do. They've washed out a whole bunch of kids that didn't belong there. They brought in a whole bunch of transfer
Mel Tucker
portal
guys.
Kids. Yep. Let's see.
Well, I'm
now.
Sure
Let's
Mel Tucker see. Loves being an underdog.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
For sure. And that's and Keith, and the about this presidency thing, AD and all that. He is absolutely not gone and gotten any info from Izzo or Tucker, any of the coaches.
Exactly. And that's suicide.
Oh, my
God. I'm telling you, Stanley's not going to survive this.
And I looked at his background, and he came from a tiny, tiny
Hello?
School that didn't even play football.
Yeah.
Hello?
You're talking
Hold
about
on, Stanley? Coach.
Yeah, he's a doctor, immunologist.
Yeah, we're having a debate here about Michigan State football.
Have fun, guys.
All right.
Thanks.
All right. Welcome to our – we got to come up with a title for this thing, Rich.
We will,
We don't
yep.
have one yet. But our good friends at Fick & Son are presenting it. So
awesome.
Hopefully somebody comes up with a name. Anyways, we have our high school football forecast show here. And our inaugural guest is a good friend of both of ours, Kevin O'Connell, the head coach for the St. Mary Snowbirds. Good morning, Coach. How are you?
I'm awesome, man. Very great to hear your voice and yours as well, Rich.
Okay, well, I tell you what, Kevin, I tell you, it's good to be back on the air talking a little bit about high school football. And whenever that happens, Kevin, you're right at the top of the list of the guys that we want to talk to. And I tell you what, Kevin, you're coming off a 7-2 year, and that was a really, you know, really tough year for everybody in the high school football world, the starts, the stops, and all that. Let's just hopefully we play all 9 regular season games and move on to some playoffs and all of that. But how's this year's team shaping up?
We're doing well. We scrimmaged last night against Mayo, and you know, first and foremost, we came out healthy, which is a priority.
Right.
You know, we're juniors with some inexperienced seniors, and we were just that. So the big takeaway is this. We had zero effort mistakes. So all our kids busted their tail, which means everything else is fixable. Scheme, technique, that's fixable. We made some mistakes, but they're all fixable. So we're in a great position. We like where we're at. It wasn't as physical as I would have liked. But by and large, we came out healthy, and we're focused now on Pickford.
Yeah, you lost a number of really fine athletes, and sometimes it's really hard to replace those, especially since it was such a senior-laden team, Coach. So who are you looking at for leadership and some big plays?
Yeah, we have a lot of quiet leadership, not a lot of real loud vocal leadership. You know, our offense will work with our offensive line. We have one senior up there. The rest are juniors. We got a junior center and Leo Warner. And then we have Riley Bright and Noah Hill. And then we have Daniel Powers, who's a senior. And I like that group. One, they're big. Two, they're smart. And three, everything's fixable as far as technique and toughness is fixable. In the backfield, we're not as big as we have been in the past, but I think we're getting to the equality point of being equally as tough. Donovan Bluth is tough. Gavin Bebel is tough. Brody Jeffers is very tough. So I like where we're at. I do.
Yeah. Hey, Coach, I mean, could you have scheduled someone a little tougher for your first game right out of the gates there, Kevin? I mean, the 2019 8-man state champs in Pickford.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. We played them 2 years ago with one day's notice, and they beat us pretty good. But the beauty of our kids is they love to compete, and they're not afraid to lose. So trying to beat Pickford week one, who, you know, when Coach Rader says they're down a little bit, means they're a regional finalist or a semifinalist team. But they're about 2 years away from another one because they got a great freshman class coming in. So, yeah, we like our schedule, and we like to schedule strong opponents.
Well, you probably have the best bonding experience possible with that long bus ride to and from, Coach.
And there's no room for comfort either because it's a JV varsity doubleheader. So we're going to put 30 kids on one bus, and that'll be nice. You know, it'll be about 89 degrees out on a Friday afternoon. It'll be warm.
Hey, Kevin, I know that you were a diehard 11-man football guy and all that, but I tell you what, you've really adjusted well in your first couple of years of 8-man football. I mean, offensively, you scored 486 and 447 points in back-to-back years, Kevin. I mean, really, you've done a nice job in getting these kids ready to play this type of football.
I appreciate that, Rich. That means a lot. I will tell you, though, I'm not going to take all the credit, though, because there's some great coaches out here around the country and in the state that coach 8-man. And I'm be honest enough that I'm humble enough to ask a million questions in the off season. And if I like it, we'll take it. If not, then so be it. But there's some very, very great football minds that playing 8-man football. And we're fortunate enough to hopefully match our scheme with our personnel. So that's right. All we're trying to do, Rich.
All right. Now what are just a couple of the differences that you see, Kevin, between the 11-man and the 8-man game?
By and large, I think as a fan, there really isn't. Once the whistle blows, the narrowing of the field accommodates for the missing. Basically, an 8-man, you take two offensive linemen and a back out on defense. Basically a DB or two defensive linemen. The biggest thing is not offense. And there's a myth about 8-man that it's a wide open spread game. No, everybody who wins a state title wins it by pounding the rock. And after week 5 in Northern Michigan or even in the state of Michigan, you're not running the spread with any success because the wind is snowing and the rain is sideways. So you better have a great under center running game, which, you know, a lot of great teams do. The difference, Rich, is on defense. There is no help. I mean, you either have to be a great open field tackling team, and if you're not, you will get beat. There is no help.
Yeah.
You have to match the box, and you have to put your 5'9", 150-pound corner on a 6'4" receiver that runs a 5'0", 40 and with no help. And if you give them help, you take a guy out of the box, and they're going to run on you. So it's Jimmy's and Joe's, and it's fun. It really is.
Yeah, well, when you say it's fun, Coach, we know it is because I remember we are going to play 11-man football or die trying.
I'm not dead yet. Maybe they twisted my arm. I don't know.
Well, Coach, enjoy your trip to Pickford and enjoy the Clydesburger.
Yeah, that's funny. We got to work that into our pregame meal, so there's nothing like a Clyde burger pregame, so we'll see how that works. But I think we're planning on it.
I don't think you can get away with it because the guy's like, "Well, we're stopping at Clyde's, right?" No, we're not. Well, then I'm not going.
There might be two stops: one on the way up and two on the way back.
There you
good idea, Kevin.
I've seen it.
I've taken my wife out to dinner at Clyde's purposely from Grayling here. I drive the hour and 15 minutes to take her out, and we have a nice dinner at Clyde's Drive-In. It's awesome.
It's so worth it. You can't beat the triple C and a milkshake.
Exactly.
There you go. All right, Coach. Kevin O'Connell from the St. Barry Snowbirds. Good luck on this year's season.
Thanks, Jerry. Appreciate it.
All right.
Great talking to you, Rich.
All right. You too, bud.
Well, we do. We love Coach O'Connell. Got to start here in Grayling. You know, we talked about him for a moment last week, Rich, about,
right.
You know, he's got that relatability.
Oh.
And he also always has energy.
He does. Absolutely. And that's what you see in the good coaches, the connection that these coaches have with the kids because they, you know, they're mature. Because they're older, but yet they have that youthful energy. And it connects with the kids. They pick up on that. And Kevin is just he's a great football coach. But all of these kids will remember Kevin the rest of their lives because he's played an important role in their lives.
I couldn't agree more. I'm so glad that he's part of Joe's life.
For sure. Joe was very fortunate.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it because I've done both. I've played for amazing coaches, and I've played for a couple Tom Stuckey, if you're out there.
that you just assume forget.
Yeah, just, I never forgot. When they're really bad, you never forget.
Right.
But, yeah, and we're going to have Coach Greg Vaughn from Traverse City West on in a few minutes. So let's talk about the schedule. We wanted to do this week because there are a few games Thursday that we won't be able to address next week, primarily the Central and the West games.
It is, exactly. They get started on next Thursday, JC, and TC West plays very tough Midland, the Chemics. Surprising that they would be nicknamed the Chemics in Midland, right? With Dow there and everything. But
It could have been the Pharmacists.
Right. Two really parallel programs. Every year, they make the playoffs almost every single year. Very similar records. They've had their last two games, they've played to within one score.
So you got Midland High and Midland Dow, and you've got Traverse City West and Traverse City Central.
Exactly. Yep. And then later on, at a 7 o'clock kickoff, is TC Central taking on DeWitt, last year's Division III state champs. So that is going to be a great matchup as well, JC. Both of them playing at the Big House, and we will be there broadcasting.
Yeah. It's going to be our inaugural broadcast on 106.3 FM for Traverse City West. We're very excited. Rich coming out of retirement. Tom Devitt coming out of retirement.
Right.
And folks, I'm telling you, you're never going to hear a better broadcast team than Rich and Tom doing high school sports. They both care about it. They both know a lot about it. And like I said, both came out of retirement.
We did.
And it's not like we're paying them a fortune.
We threw away the crutches and we're back out there.
Although I think I have to give them some money for Zingerman's when you're in Ann Arbor.
Yeah, it's a must.
Yeah. But no, the DeWitt program, I don't know what how many guys they lost. We don't know that.
Right.
But we know the Central team, people loaded. Are spouting, at least on the offensive side of the football. They're going to play Central or West in the Patriot game. The last Patriot game was a mauling. Yeah. It was the first time I've ever seen that game on TV, Rich. And man,
Central took it to them.
Central pushed them around.
They did. Well, they have the number two recruit in the entire state of Michigan playing for Central. And the kid, Josh Burnham is his name. He's a quarterback linebacker. You love that combo. The kid that's super tough. And he's going to Notre Dame, JC. He's 6'4", 225. He's an absolute stud. And as James talked about in during Friday faceoff portion there from the TC Record Eagle, that offensive line is as good as there is in Northern Michigan. Every one of the offensive linemen have received offers to play collegiately.
It kind of reminds me of the offensive line we had at Brother Rice in 1975. They won the mythical state championship, and everybody went to D1 schools.
Right.
Harvard, Boston College, Notre Dame.
Amazing.
When you have that kind of talent. And what happens is like, you know, a whole bunch of coaches come to see the one kid. Then they realize that everybody out there is recruitable.
You hear that a lot when they go to scout one kid. And like you said, JC, all of a sudden they notice these other, like, who's this kid?
Yeah.
Wait a second. Who's this
Didn't
kid?
Didn't happen when they came to recruit Kevin Smith for me.
But it happens with other people.
It happens with other people. Who's that kid? Why is he even out there?
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
He should be carrying the water bottles.
Right. Oh, those other kids are standing out like crazy.
Yeah, so the first game out of the box is going to tell us a lot of both of these teams. Are those the only two teams in our listening area that play on Thursday?
That's the one, as far as my research, JC, that's exactly what I noticed, was that those were the only two games Thursday. Now, of course, I could be wrong on that, but I searched the computer as much as I could last night looking for other games
Grayling
on Thursday.
I know Grayling has played on that Thursday before,
right.
But they're not.
And again, two games going to be played before Labor Day weekend this year. So that's, of course, always interesting because most football coaches, JC, as you know, are very routine oriented. And if it were left up to them, if they're going to play on Friday, they would love to play on every single Friday. Therefore, their routines are continuous, are the same. It's not messing them up because they get in on Mondays, we do offense. On Tuesdays, we do defense. We do this. We implement game plans. We do this. So there's all kinds of stuff that go into it. But football coaches, a lot like military personnel, very routine oriented.
Yeah, you know, we're going to talk to Coach Greg Vaughn here in just a moment. We're dialing him right now. He's at their Little Titans camp.
Oh, I love it.
Coach, are you there?
Hello.
All right.
Yeah, I'm here.
Coach Greg Vaughn from the TC West Titans joining us on our forecast show. How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing great. We just got out of a little mini film session here.
a mini film for the mini mites?
Yeah, we're just multitasking. We got the little kids going. We got guys watching film. We're trying to get it all done today.
Yeah, that, it's a busy time of year, Coach, for sure. And I tell you what, really looking forward to broadcasting that first game in the Battle of the Big House, Coach. And you and Midland, you guys have been meeting up here the last few years, Coach. And the last time you played them, you guys did take it on the chin. But you're coming off a 6-2 year. Midland's coming off an 8-1 season. It should be a tremendous ball game.
Yeah, it's always a great ball game. That last time we played them 2 years ago, if people don't remember, that game got done at 1:30 in the morning because of lightning. So it was a long day.
Wow.
And, you know, our guys are ready to get back after them. And, you know, always a good ball club to go against. And being in the Big House is even makes it even more special.
Yeah, you're going to see, I'm sure, a jacked-up Central and Midland team playing on that big turf. Always once they get the wide-eyed look out of their face, Coach. So tell our listeners a little bit about what they can expect, and maybe not full-blown, but what you guys are going to attempt to do in that first game.
Well, we're pretty, all sides of the ball, special teams included, we're pretty senior-oriented team this year. A lot of guys that have some really good experience coming out of last year, and so you know, one of the things we hang our hat on as a program is that we're just very aggressive and physical. That's something they can, you know, they'll be able to tell. It doesn't matter what phase. We're pretty aggressive on special teams, do some crazy different things as far as our sets go. And, you know, offensively, we spread it out, but our heart and soul is we're going to try to pound it and try to break you by getting after you. And our defense is just crazy. They get after you, bring everything they have, and same thing. We're just trying to get teams to break and pull ahead down there at the end.
Yeah, and Coach, I'm sure that you've seen film on Midland again. The game last year was canceled because of COVID, but they end up playing most of their games. They played 9 overall, and they only gave up 98 points the entire season, Coach. So you see them. Do you expect them to continue that kind of defensive momentum into this year?
Oh, absolutely. It's the scheme they run. They run a lot of man, and they're very aggressive with their second half and their linebackers. Their D-linemen, they take great honor. They do what we call grubbers, or they're basically bear crawling through your old lineman's legs. They don't care about making plays. They just care about making piles, which allows their linebackers and DBs just to be flying downhill and get after you. And if you don't account for them, you're surely not going to move the ball. So that's been a staple of their defense, and offensively, they're always explosive. They throw the ball around, a lot of screens, but they always have a really good quarterback and a running back there you got to account for.
Yeah. Now, Coach, being the largest school north of Grand Rapids, you guys probably – the numbers in your program this year, both on varsity and JV, are they pretty high, or where are they at?
You know, this year's kind of interesting. We're a little bit down, a little bit, not necessarily on JV, more our junior class is a little bit down from where it's been. But when you look at our senior class is just a little bit higher than it normally is by the time they're seniors. Our freshman class is above where we normally are. And then you start looking at middle school and our numbers are really good. So it's just you always get once in a while a cycle you go through and you get a class, maybe two. You hope it's not two or three that are a little bit smaller. So well, you know, overall in our program, we just kind of have one class that's maybe a little bit smaller than the rest. But I'll tell you what, we've got, even though our varsity's not 50, 60 guys, you know, there's not a kid on our team right now that can't play for us, which is a really good thing to have.
Coach, have you settled on a starting quarterback?
Yeah, so Brandon Kontek, you know, returns from last year. He started all our games last year for us. He's really developed here in the offseason, developed his body, but I think the biggest thing coming out of our scrimmage yesterday, Coach Tester, who's our offense coordinator, and I think his leadership and some of the things he did yesterday, you know, Brandon of last year didn't do those things. And this year he's making those plays and making some decisions and leading our team, which you get a senior quarterback that does that sort of thing, you can be pretty successful.
And coach, for sure, like, and you had mentioned, you have a lot of senior leadership this year. That's really nice to where things, when things change on the field and do different things like that, those kids kind of become coaches on the field as well. And so it really, it makes your job just a little bit easier.
Yeah, it's, you know, anytime you can get a group of seniors that we have that buy in and willing to be those types of leaders, you know, it makes it a little bit easier as a coach.
Well, I know that Rich and Tom are excited to come out to practice. You guys are
looking. We're hoping next Tuesday to come out to practice, coach.
So we'll get a more in-depth look. And the broadcast squad all ready for, a 3:30 kickoff?
3:30, yes, at the Big House.
Kickoff on Thursday. Luckily, you have the whole week to prepare for it. They're not coming out of classes. And what time do you climb on the bus and drive down, coach?
Oh, we're kind of looking about 9 o'clock. We'll stop a couple times, you know, walk, do little walkthroughs, eat, all that sort of thing, and then, you know, get down there. Our normal, try to get down there about 2 hours before game time and start preparing.
Well, I'm sure the whole squad is excited, and we are as well, to get that first broadcast going on 106.3 FM.
Well, we appreciate your guys' support. It's going to be awesome, and our kids are ready to roll.
Awesome. Looking forward to it, coach. We'll see you at practice.
Thanks.
All right. Well, there you go. A very upbeat coach, a legendary Northern Michigan coach. Had a great run at Traverse City St. Francis,
right,
and now at Central. And right. I had to. I'm
at West.
Huh?
At West. Traverse City West. Yeah.
Did I say Central? So,
yeah.
No, I'm
sorry. Oh, no, those guys.
No. But I was thinking, because I was going to say the next sentence.
Right.
Good to have a senior leader at quarterback.
Yes.
It can make all the difference. Even in high school, a great quarterback is irreplaceable.
It is. Absolutely. When you have a senior there, like you said, making the decisions, JC, because a lot of these teams run a read option, it's important to have that experience, and they've seen a lot of different things. They make better choices.
Not panicking.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Calm, cool, collected, because things will get hairy no matter who you're playing or when you're playing them or whatever. Things get crazy there in the foxhole.
Don't forget, this is our first broadcast. Things might get crazy.
I know. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
All right, there you go. That's our first forecast show. I want to thank Fick & Sons for supporting this. We'll try to get it a little bit more organized starting next week. But that's going to do it for us here on Northern Focus / the Forecast Show. And we'll be back with you next Friday. Here is CBS Sports.